Aloha, and welcome to Pu'uhonua Oho Nau Nau. It's a place of refuge where Native Hawaiians could run and escape the consequences of violating the kapu, a system of complex laws and regulations that kept the gods appeased. Violators were immediately punished or even killed. For even should a commoner's shadow fall across a person of high rank, death would be imminent. In those days, Hawaii was a land without peace, for every district was governed by a different warring chief, and bloodshed was common. But soon the stage would be set for a miracle, and the door would be open for a new era of God in Hawaii. This is a story of two courageous women who would not only change the future of Hawaii forever, but they would inspire the faith of thousands. The first is that of the High Chiefess Kapiolani, who would make a bold stand for her faith and bring freedom from the terror of the goddess Pele. And the gentle yet wise Queen Liliuokalani, Hawaii's last reigning monarch, whose faith would remind us forever of what only the courage of forgiveness can bring. Welcome to our presentation of Freedom, Faith, and Forgiveness. The year was 1778 when Captain Cook arrived in the Kealakekua Bay, just a few miles from here. When he first arrived, the Hawaiians thought he was the god Lono. But the following year, he would be killed and his body brutalized. But that didn't end the white man's expedition. Soon, an endless armada of ships would arrive, bringing a European culture along with rum, rifles, and diseases, that over the next five decades, the Hawaiian population would be cut in half. Kamehameha the Great traded guns for goods, and by 1810, the islands were under one rule. But by this time, the kapu system began to show signs of weakening as the Hawaiians observed with surprise the Europeans repeatedly violating the taboos without retribution from the gods. 9 years later, in May of 1819, King Kamehameha the Great died. And upon his father's death, Liholiho, or Kamehameha II, became king. And he chose to abolish all taboos and religious laws in order to promote life free from the kapu system. The worship of idols was forbidden and the priesthood dismantled. But the superstitious fears of the volcano and the spirits of the dead and other deities continued. But furthest from Liholiho's mind, however, was any concept of God's perfect plan for Hawaii, for his actions would answer the prayers of one of their own people who had left Hawaii 11 years earlier. On October 23rd of that very same year, a crowd gathered on a Boston wharf to bid farewell to seven Protestant missionaries about to undertake a five-month voyage to Hawaii. Now, several of them were classmates of the man who left the Kealakekua Bay. His name, Henry Opukahaya. Henry had left his homeland to escape the bloodshed and tribal wars and in the New England states, he became a fervent Christian. His keen mind and his deep faith made him a leader with hopes of one day returning to bring the truths of God's word to his beloved Hawaii. And he encouraged others to join him. But Opukahaya would never return. Typhus fever claimed his life in 1818. But his fervent prayers and pleas did not go unheeded. His life had indelibly inspired many, and soon other missionaries bearing the good news would land on the Big Island in 1820. And it wouldn't be long before the people of Hawaii began to embrace the one true God. When the missionaries arrived in Kailua, they landed in a territory controlled by the high chief of Kona, Na'ihe, and his wife, the daughter of the high chief from the district of Hilo named Kapiolani. She was a tall, portly woman with keen black eyes and an engaging countenance, a queen in appearance when she was with other royalty. She quickly embraced Christianity, and her courage would soon become a part of Hawaii's history. But her conversion to Christianity wasn't enough yet to persuade her people to turn from their fear of the goddess Pele. Although a lesser god, Pele was perhaps the most visible and most feared of the Hawaiian gods. But Kapiolani knew if her people were ever to see the truth, she would have to break the goddess's spell of fear by defying Pele, by standing on the promises of her new found faith. Date was December 1824. The chiefess Kapiolani journeyed from Kona to the legendary home of Pele, the fire goddess, right here at Halemaumau Crater. Now, fearing the retribution of Pele, her family and friends begged her to turn back. But with stalwart faith, she confidently replied, "If I am destroyed by Pele, you may worship her. But if I am not, you must turn to the one and only true God." It was over 100 miles that she journeyed by foot until she crossed the steaming cracks and chasms, only to be greeted by clouds of sulfur that set a ghostly guard over the crater. But it would be here that Kapiolani's courage and faith would be memorialized as that which brought freedom from the bondage of fear. Kapiolani arrived, a priestess of Pele demanded that she leave and challenged her with curses. She was haughty and stubborn. She forbade Kapiolani to come any nearer to the volcano, or she'd face death at the hands of the furious goddess. Kapiolani, ignoring the priestess, journeyed down this forbidden crater. And to emphasize her trust in God even more, on the way down, she ate some ohelo berries, sacred only to Pele, threw rocks into the crater, and she proclaimed, "I do not fear Pele." But Kapiolani stood her ground with faith and determination, for she knew that 1 John 3 said, "For this reason the Son of God was manifest, that he might destroy the works of the evil one." Kapiolani was encouraged to find that one of the missionaries by the name of Goodrich had come from Hilo to support her. You see, the news of her plan to defy the goddess had spread far and wide, and Goodrich was one of the missionaries that had landed in Kailua. About 4 years earlier, he was with a team of explorers, and they had visited Halemaumau. The natives were astonished that although the taboos were completely ignored, no harm came to them. In fact, ohelo berries growing around the crater were freely eaten, and the lake of fire was examined without an ounce of fear. And after a long and hushed silence, Kapiolani finally emerged to the cheers of her followers. And as she ascended, she did so singing hymns to God, to the God who would set her people free. 12 years later, the Reverend Titus Cohen of Hilo would write that after the visit of Kapiolani, many, many turned from their idols to the one and only true God. In his autobiography, Cohen wrote that among his converts were a high priest of Pele and his sister, a priestess of the volcano. He described her with these words: "His sister was haughty and stubborn, but at length she yielded with her brother, and both became faithful members of our church." It's another testimony of freedom, faith, and forgiveness. The next stop on our journey with God in Hawaii will be the island of Oahu, where more missionaries will have landed. We'll find that over the next 80 years, Hawaii would never be the same. But even in the midst of the changing landscape, God will ever be present in our continuing story of freedom, faith, and forgiveness. After Kamehameha II's removal of the heiaus and the temples and the kapu system, it seemed like Hawaii was waiting for truth. Now, opposed to some popular opinion, it wasn't the missionaries who abolished the ancestral worship of the gods. It was actually Hawaii's own ali'i, the king, his mother Keopuolani, and the queen, Ka'ahumanu. This would all take place a year before the missionaries even arrived. And by the time they did arrive in 1820, the white man had already been in Hawaii for 40 years, and the land was struggling under widespread prostitution, alcoholism, and the decimation of the Hawaiian race. By 1820, the population of the Hawaiian people had decreased from 300,000 to 140,000. Foreign contact and loose morality brought widespread venereal diseases, which resulted in sterility and miscarriages and other epidemics such as tuberculosis, smallpox, whooping cough, and measles, bringing in its wake poor sanitation, poverty, and malnutrition. Influenced by Reverend Hiram Bingham, the king banned prostitution and drunkenness, which brought disdain from the foreigners and the shipping industry. But nevertheless, Christianity began to spread throughout the islands. More missionaries and medical doctors arrived, and churches began to spring up on all the islands. In 1836, Queen Kaahumanu commissioned Reverend Bingham to design and build Kawaihao, which became the central church for many of the royalty. 50 years later, the Kamehameha successorship would end. Four constitutions were drafted, and each one incrementally reducing the power of the monarch in favor of a more elected legislature. After King Kamehameha V died in 1872, he left no successor. So Lunalilo became the first elected head of state. His term lasted only 1 year and 25 days before he died, and King Kalakaua was elected to succeed him. Kalakaua's goal was to restore the monarchy and the Hawaiian culture, but his reign was filled with struggles and political battles. Hawaii was changing rapidly at this time. Whaling, sugar production, and sandalwood had given Hawaii a worldwide reputation. But now, stiff tariffs on exports to the U.S. impeded profits. Kalakaua traveled to Washington and received a treaty that removed the taxes imposed on exports. And in return, Pearl Harbor was ceded to the U.S. This favored nation status, however, was later repealed, and a 48% tax was imposed on exports, which brought Hawaii's economy to an all-time low. During this time, the business community and others were pushing for annexation, which would make Hawaii a part of the United States. In this way, business exports would have free trade and Hawaii would receive U.S. military protection. Kalakaua resisted annexation, but in 1887, under the threat of force, Kalakaua signed a constitution that stripped the Hawaiian monarchy of much of its authority. It is now widely known as the Bayonet Constitution. Some wanted him to abdicate his throne to his sister Liliuokalani, and others wanted to end the monarchy altogether. In the following years, his health failed, and while seeking medical help in San Francisco, he died in January of 1891. His sister, Liliuokalani, then succeeded him to the Hawaiian throne, and she would be the last reigning monarch in Hawaii. In this, our final story, we will look at not the controversy, nor will we take sides, that is for another discussion, but instead, we will look at the wisdom and the grace of a great yet gentle queen whose faith carried her past a reciprocal justice and retaliation to the impacting account of freedom, faith, and forgiveness. We're here at the Iolani Palace, which was completed in 1882. This place will play a central role in the history of Hawaii, marking the end of the monarchy and the beginning of a new republic. When the Queen took the throne in 1891, Hawaii was locked in a political struggle between people of Hawaiian blood, those numbers which had dwindled down to 35,000, and an influential group of non-Hawaiian reformists convinced that the island's royalty had outlived their usefulness. The Queen's effort to restore the monarchy to Hawaii fell on deaf ears. And after failed efforts, in 1893, she was forced to abdicate her throne to the inevitability of change. 2 years later, an ill-fated rebellion took a momentous turn when a cache of arms was found hidden in her garden. Until this day, no one knows for sure who was responsible for their placement. Although she denied any knowledge of this, nevertheless, this discovery implicated her. And on January 16th, 1895, she was confined to an apartment in this Iolani Palace for treason. Shortly thereafter, she signed a document denouncing any claims to the throne and recognizing the legitimacy of the new republic. She remained confined until September of the following year. But during this time, the queen wrote many songs, among which is the well-known Aloha Oi. But the one we want to take special notice of is called the Queen's Prayer, entitled O Ko Aloha. It was written on March 22nd, 1895. In it, the queen tells of her great love for God, a love great enough to ask forgiveness for those who imprisoned her.
Your loving mercy is as high as the heavens, and your truth so perfect. I live in sorrow, imprisoned, but you are my light. Your glory is my support. Behold, see the sins of man, and instead of malevolence or anger, please forgive and cleanse. My nana ino ino, na heva o kanaka, a ka e hui kala, a ma e ma ino. And so, O Lord, protect us beneath your wings. And let peace be our portion, now and forevermore.
Sometimes the greatest strength and the most invincible courage will not be in taking up our rights, but rather it's in laying them down. Sometimes our futures may best be won not by us demanding our ways, but by setting them aside for something far greater. And we lay them down not by force, nor even to our opponents, but to the one who holds all things in his hands. We may not know what the future holds, but we know who holds the future, and that makes all the difference. Let me explain. 2,000 years ago, two purposes came head to head, God's and man's. And the people's voices, mixed with religious leaders, cried, "Crucify him." But the Bible tells us that Jesus could have deployed a legion of angels that would have destroyed those angry voices. But instead, we find these words, "But God so loved the world that he gave up all that he had, his only begotten son, and that whosoever believes in him should not perish, but have not just an earthly life, but an eternal life. God knew that forgiveness, not retaliation, would be the greatest gift that he could give to you and to me. And if we can learn that, then we will understand that often the greatest gift, for example, a husband could give to a wife, may not be in demanding his rights, but instead laying them aside with kind intention, with intentionality, in order to gain something much greater. That is the greatest act of love. I mean, how often have we sacrificed relationships under the guise of demanding what is rightfully ours, and all the while, love is frightfully missing? And by Kapiolani's life, and by the example of Lilio Kalani, we are reminded of this, that the word love, in word alone, may soften a sentence or even adorn a romantic song, but when it's lived out loud, when the chips are down, love when it's exampled in action, love when it's intentional and purposeful, that's what trades the temporary for the eternal. Jesus did that. And because he did, we can have the strength to do the same. Because in the end, we realize that it was Jesus who was the inspiration of these two courageous women. And he'll be yours as well. And regardless of what man and governments do, in the end, only he can ultimately bring you freedom, faith, and forgiveness.